Door whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Silver, and I represent the appellant, Hans Cabrera Umansor. Last month, in United States v. Gomez, this court held that the modified categorical approach cannot be applied to analyze a defendant's prior conviction unless the statute of conviction is itself divisible into separate offenses, at least one of which must contain all of the elements of the federal sentencing enhancement at issue. Applying this holding to the physical abuse subsection of the very same child abuse law at issue in this case, this court rejected the government's attempts to create divisions in the child abuse law that had never been recognized by the Maryland courts. This court should do so again here. There is simply no subsection of Maryland's sexual child abuse law that meets all of the elements of the federal definitions of sexual abuse of a minor or a forcible sex offense, either actual or constructive. Maryland's child abuse law does not require an intent to gratify sexually or a use of actual or constructive force. For this reason, the district court erred in applying the modified categorical approach to Mr. Cabrera's prior conviction, and his sentence must be vacated. The cases are really, in my mind, crystal clear in Maryland that the child abuse, the sexual abuse subsection of Maryland's child abuse law does not require an intent to gratify sexually or an active use of force, either actual or constructive.
Can I ask you this? If we were allowed to use the modified categorical approach under your argument, would you agree that having sex with an 11-year-old would be a crime of violence or sexual gratification?
If you were allowed to use the modified categorical approach,
if we were allowed to look at the plea, would
in the way that Your Honor would like to look at it?
I understand. It's a hypothetical.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
yes.
I just want to eliminate issues. In other
yes.
words, the issue in this case is whether we use a modified categorical.
That's correct, Your Honor. And although really, I mean, the issue is really how you use the modified categorical approach as well, which is, you know,
well, the plea agreement is pretty much a Shepherd document. I mean, the guy pleads.
That's correct. Okay. That is correct, Your Honor. And the Tate case is the Court of Special Appeals case in Maryland that expressly and unequivocally holds that there's no intent to gratify necessary. And The Degren case is the case
You know, if you're just looking at the statute, as you point out, we've recognized that the statute's broader than the categories that qualify for predicate offense.
That's correct,
Your
Honor.
The only way that we can use this is if we could use a modified categorical approach.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Your argument is Gomez disposes of this.
It does dispose of it. It does, Your Honor, both in its statement about how and when you use the modified categorical approach and its recognition of how this particular statute works. This is a child abuse statute. It's broad, as the court quoted in Gomez. The gravamen of the offense is the abuse of the child, not the actual act against the child. And there really is no difference. There's little difference between this case and Gomez, and the Maryland cases, you know, could not be more clear. And you know, the government, I think, tried to make the same distinctions in this case that it did in Gomez, where it tried to take words in the statute that appear that they could be divisible and just assign them their own meanings, saying that exploitation does not require intent to gratify and molestation does, and the Maryland cases just do not bear that distinction out. If the court does not have any other questions for me, then I would cede the remainder of my time to the government.
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear from the government.
I just want to be clear that the government has not moved for reconsideration in Gomez, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Time has come and gone.
That's correct.
They haven't asked us for extra time to consider it.
That's correct.
Gomez is circuit precedent.
Correct, Your Honor.
So Gomez does away with a good bit of what's in your brief.
It does, Your Honor. I think it narrows the issue.
Why not all of it? I can't understand how you get around Gomez. I'm very surprised at the government's position, and it seems to me we've made ourselves an outlier because these sexual offense statutes are very common across the country, and other circuits have
trouble in finding these crimes of violence, but using the modified categorical approach. But it seems to me the only way you're going to get relief is to take this to the Supreme Court.
Your Honor, if I may back up and start by introducing myself. May it please the Court, my name is Erin Police, and I represent the United States. Getting to your issue, Judge Niemeyer, the government's position is that Gomez can be differentiated from the issue in this case. Gomez only deals with the first part of the sexual abuse statute, or the first part of the child abuse statute that pertains to physical abuse. And of course, the issue in Gomez did not have to do with the generic crimes that are at issue here.
I think if you look at the statute, and the statute just basically says at the bottom, you go to B, the prohibited conduct is the conduct of child abuse. And it's not only the defendant who can't do it, but the defendant can't have custody and allow child abuse. I mean, it seems to me the statute, just that scope of the statute allows for nonviolent conduct or non-sexual conduct. It allows for inhumane treatment, abuse, all kinds of things. And just because you define it to include it, we don't know whether that was necessarily the essence of the charge, because we're only allowed to look at the statute. And the statute prohibits child abuse, period. And then it goes and defines it in many different ways. And once you have the possibility that the person could have been convicted for a nonviolent crime, I think Gomez says we can't do it.
Your Honor, I understand the Court's concern, but I think the Gomez decision focuses on, first of all, not only does it focus on the first part of the child abuse statute, the physical abuse section, but it also discusses this issue of divisibility. And in order for the modified...
It makes a holding flatly contrary to the government's view in Gomez and flatly contrary to your initial brief about divisibility. So you're now stuck with that holding.
That's correct, Your Honor. And our reading of Gomez is that the Court didn't determine necessarily that the statute was indivisible. It just determined that for the purposes of the first portion, the physical abuse portion of the statute, it wasn't divisible to an extent that was meaningful for the purposes of determining whether...
I find this portion is divisible.
That's correct, Your Honor. So I think that's really the underlying issue.
How can you go into any portion of Section A? You have to use the most benign portion of Section A in defining abuse. And when you get to the most benign factual circumstance, that necessarily denies your the fact that this person was necessarily convicted.
Your Honor, just to be clear, just to make sure I understand the Court's question, when you refer to Section A, are you referring to the physical abuse portion of the statute or the sexual abuse portion of the statute?
Those are types of abuse, right?
So the way the Maryland statute is broken...
You have 35CA and 35CB.
Your Honor, it's 35C1 and 35C2.
The statute in front of here. And...
Gomez dealt explicitly with Section 35C1. This case, Your Honor, deals with 35C2. And Gomez noted in that decision that there's a difference between physical child abuse and sexual child abuse. Gomez explicitly dealt with the physical child abuse portion of the statute. And in the discussion of divisibility in the Gomez section, the Court noted, in fact, that the physical child abuse portion of the statute was divisible into its disjunctive elements.
What are you saying? Let's go back. I've got the statute in front of me now.
Okay, Your Honor, thank you. The Gomez decision was specifically referring to the first portion of the statute, the physical abuse portion, 35C(i). And the Gomez decision...
Hold it. A, 35CA, is a definition section, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
B is the conduct that's prohibited.
Correct, Your Honor.
And B says anyone who commits child abuse is guilty.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, now, we have a person charged with child abuse. If a person pleads guilty to child abuse, we do not have any way of knowing whether that person is convicted of any one of those definitions up in A. You have to take the full range in A uh, possibilities and exclude the most benign, or include the most benign as violent conduct.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with the court's position, and I think the Gomez court did as well, because the Gomez decision was explicitly limited to this physical abuse portion of the statute as opposed to the sexual abuse portion of the statute.
The physical abuse portion. The statute says, tell me where the conduct, the prohibitive conduct, don't stay away from the definitions for a moment.
I apologize,
Your Honor. It says, a parent or other person who has permanent or temporary care or custody or responsibility for the supervision of a child or a household or family member who causes abuse to the child is guilty of a felony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's abuse. And that is the categorically, that is the conduct with which he is found guilty. Right?
Correct, Your Honor, but I think as the Gomez...
How do we break it down? And you could, you select any one of the definitions, and you pick the most violent, but you have to predict the most benign, which is allowing somebody to take a photograph of a girl nude.
Your Honor, I believe the issue here is the divisibility of the statute, and I think the court's position is that based on the language that you just read, the statute is not divisible. But the Gomez...
We held in Gomez, because the word abuse is defined to include many different things.
Your Honor, the government's reading of Gomez is different than that. And the government's reading of Gomez is that, first of all, the statute is divisible into physical child abuse and sexual child abuse.
How do you get that?
Because you can't look at the term abuse without going to the definitions in the statute. And when you do go into the definitions of the statute, it's clear...
What about inhumane treatment? Why did you pick the two... Sure, the definition is divisible, but the conduct isn't. The conduct is child abuse, and it includes inhumane treatment.
Your Honor, the inhumane treatment, the cruel or inhumane treatment and malicious acts portion refers to the physical child abuse portion of the statute. I think some of
the... physical portion. Show me that.
That's the physical abuse portion. That's what the Gomez court dealt with in that case.
That limitation doesn't exist in the definition prohibited conduct.
Your Honor, I think it might be best if we discuss some of the Maryland cases interpreting the elements of child abuse in the context that it can be committed to understand a little bit where the government, a little more clearly what the government's position is.
With the statute first. The statute does not prohibit physical child abuse and sexual child abuse and inhumane child abuse. It prohibits child abuse. And if somebody's charged with a violation of this statute, then the possibilities of conduct that fulfill that is the full range of the definitions in A. All the ones you cited. Now, the ones you point to, you got a good case for. But I don't know why we can limit a charge. Somebody pleads guilty to child abuse, which is defined in B. Not defined, that's the conduct. Any child abuse. So without looking at the indictment, we're stuck with the fact that a person was convicted under this statute for child abuse, which includes nonviolent conduct.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the statute, by explicitly differentiating and having these different definitions for abuse, where the statute separately defines sexual abuse and then explicitly lists categories of conduct that constitute...
Non-exclusive categories.
That's correct. They are non-exclusive categories, but nevertheless, they're categories of conduct that constitute the offense. For instance, rape, incest, or sexual offense in any degree, sodomy, or unnatural or perverted sexual practices. When those offenses are committed against a minor, I don't think there's any question that that would constitute a crime of violence.
So if I understand your argument, and incidentally, if you read my dissent in Gomez, I'm not a believer in what I'm arguing. But what your position is, if I understand it correctly, is even though B just uses the word child abuse, by defining child abuse in 5 or 10 different ways, the statute has defined the conduct in 5 or 10 different ways. And because it has now segregated the word abuse through the definitions, that now we can use the modified categorical approach. That's your position?
That is the government's position, Your Honor. And I think just to be clear, if the divisions in the division, in order for the modified categorical approach to apply, the divisions in the statute need to correlate to the generic offenses in the sentencing guidelines. And that's exactly the case that we have here. There are meaningful divisions in this sexual abuse portion of the statute that would clearly constitute the offenses listed in for the purposes of the sentencing enhancement.
Well, the government maintains that sexual abuse under Maryland law can be divided into molestation and exploitation. And as I understand your argument, you say that molestation, child abuse, under Maryland law would always, that's what's at issue here, and that would always qualify for a predicate under the sentencing guidelines. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But that exploitation would not, but that you have molestation here. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay,
I think,
can you give me an example, because I couldn't find one, I couldn't figure out one, in which molestation of a child does not include exploitation?
Your Honor,
so I'm trying to separate these out as two separate offenses, as the government maintains they are.
No, I understand, Your Honor. The Maryland case law is not explicitly clear on the differentiation between exploitation.
No, and I understand that. I'm asking you to give me a hypothetical. Give me a case, if you can, in which there is molestation, but there's not exploitation.
Your Honor, I would, so exploitation in the Bratkins case, just so we're clear, is defined as when a parent or person with temporary or care or custody takes advantage of or improperly uses the child for his or her own benefit. There doesn't necessarily need to be any sort of sexual conduct in order to have exploitation.
Exploitation, you could have a photograph, couldn't you?
You
An
could.
Inappropriate photograph.
That doesn't,
That's
that
correct.
Wouldn't, in your view, that molestation wouldn't conclude that, wouldn't cover that as well?
I think what this issue goes to is that there are alternative elements in the Maryland child abuse statute. So there are two sets of elements that, this is the government's position, that would constitute a child abuse offense under the sexual abuse portion. The first element is the same for both sets, and that's that there has to be, you have to have a parent or person with temporary custody or care of the child. And then the second element under one subset would be there's a sexual offense, some conduct constituting a sexual offense. The alternative element would be that there's conduct rising to the level of child abuse, but not rising to the level of a sexual offense under Maryland law. And of course, a sexual offense in Maryland law doesn't involve touching, and the requisite mens rea of the intent to arouse or sexually gratify.
The Maryland cases always talk about molestation and exploitation together. They're always linked together. There's every indication from Maryland case law that, as it seems to be my view, that molestation includes exploitation. They are not separable.
I see the court's position. I think, however, if we look to the Walker case that the defense most recently cited in their Rule 28J letter, the Walker decision discusses that there hasn't been a statutory definition defining sexual molestation or, on the other hand, exploitation. I think implicit in that, in the wording there, is that these are two separate definitions.
Well, the dictionary definitions would certainly explain the difference. While every molestation would include exploitation, not every exploitation includes molestation.
I think
molestation
that's right,
is more serious offense with respect to a child than just exploiting.
I totally agree with that, but you're saying they're separate. And if every molestation includes an exploitation, they're not separate. They're not divisible.
I think the best, so this highlights.
Well, it's like saying murder always includes homicide. Or I mean, sure it does. And molestation, if molestation is separate, just because it includes exploitation and a bunch of other things, it includes probably assault, and it probably includes a bunch of other things. Doesn't save anything. The category, separate category is that exploitation is more benign, and they wanted to get to that more benign conduct, so that because without exploitation, the picture taking under this section may not be a molestation.
I think the court's position, or the court's questioning, sort of focuses on the fact that this statute, the molestation exploitation divisibility that we suggested in our brief, there's a number of ways that this statute is divisible. I think the clearest way.
You have a new one?
I think the because not only is the statute facially divisible, as we discussed earlier, in terms of these categories of crimes that are mentioned on the face of the statute, but it's also divisible in terms of the alternative elements. And I think because of these alternative elements, if you look towards the set of elements where the underlying offense is a sexual offense, the conviction under the child abuse portion of the statute where that's the case is undoubtedly a crime of violence.
You're right. Judge Floyd, when he wrote Gomez, said it is divisible. And he said it's divisible based on the different definitions of abuse. Point Judge Niemeyer and I were making that is to question the applicability of that to the crime that's defined itself. So what you're saying is we look at other parts of the definition. Some of them may be crimes of violence by definition.
That's correct.
Maryland definition.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What I guess I don't understand, another thing I don't understand about the what I thought you were saying was the separate crimes of sexual molestation and exploitation. Is first of all, sexual abuse says, the statute says, sexual abuse means any act that involves sexual molestation or exploitation. And that's not, that doesn't read the same way that the abuse statute reads, in that sexual is not repeated before exploitation, which suggests to me that molestation and exploitation are to be one category that sexual modifies. Okay, so there's that problem with your argument. But a secondary problem I have that under 6(2), sexual abuse includes, and but is not limited to, and then there are three things listed, three categories of things listed, 1, 2, 3. I gather from the government's brief that all of those things would be instances of molestation. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, if they are all defined as parts of sexual abuse, why wouldn't the if the legislature believes that molestation and exploitation are different kinds of child sexual abuse, why wouldn't they have given us an example of exploitation? Why would they just give us examples of molestation? It seems to me it's an indication that the legislature thinks that sexual molestation or exploitation are one thing, not divisible. Can you respond to that?
Your Honor, I don't think the legislature, when they were drafting the statute, had the federal...
It needed to separate molestation and exploitation.
It's,
why do you say that with a disjunctive there?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
There's a disjunctive in the statute. It doesn't say and the disjunctive describes two separate things.
That's correct. And
just because they choose to list sexual abuse to include that list they provide in double I, it doesn't mean that they didn't also want to include exploitation as a distinct possibility, segregating it out.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think it's that the
can
term...
can I ask you, is it the government's position that that the exploitation must be sexual?
And that the exploitation must be sexual?
Yes. Under this to be a violation of this statute.
It's not, Your Honor. No, I don't...
You just have any old exploitation, even though it's sexual abuse. Sexual abuse means any old exploitation of a child.
Your Honor, respectfully, I see my time has run up, so I'd be happy to answer the court's question if I may be permitted.
Go ahead.
Interestingly, although the definition of exploitation advanced in the Brackens decision doesn't appear to require any sort of sexual contact, all of the cases where in Maryland where there has been a conviction of sexual child abuse all involve what could be clearly interpreted as sexual contact or sexual conduct.
Sexual abuse means any act that involves sexual molestation or exploitation. So if you divide the statute at the or, are you maintaining that you can have sexual abuse under Maryland law simply by exploitation of a child without any sexual element? That seems, how can sexual abuse cover exploitation that is not sexual?
That's true, Your Honor, and I think that
so the sexual has to apply to both molestation and exploitation, doesn't it? By definition, sexual abuse.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think the differentiation here is has to, the underlying issue is the divisible elements of the statute, and
so where are you dividing? You're dividing it at the or, right? So then you have sexual molestation on one side and exploitation on the other. And I'm asking you, does the exploitation have to be sexual?
As far as I can tell, I think, no, not necessarily. I don't think it does.
The violation of Maryland sexual abuse, the exploitation does not have to
so
have
if,
sexual
if
element?
So if the way you're defining sexual is having the intent to arouse or sexually gratify, then the case law has indicated that that's not the case. However,
there could be some sexual element to the exploitation.
I think
the violation of this statute.
Quite frankly, Your Honor, I think that's implicit, especially in what we've seen in the cases.
Can I just ask you one quick question? Is the statute that's before us in this case structurally the same as the statute in Gomez, or was there an amendment breaking it down into sections?
There has been an amendment to the statute, but this one
that we have before us, is this more subdivided than the one?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that was part of the government's position. So the physical abuse portion of the statute that the Gomez court discusses does not explicitly list the categories of offenses that would constitute.
And what was this part of the editing or the this statute was put into effect when? This amendment.
The statute was codified. Both portions of the statute were codified at the same time, Your Honor. So I don't believe there was a separate amendment.
Well, I'm just looking at the statute in Gomez, and it looks like it's maybe substantively not different, but structurally, it looks like this one's broken down more.
That's correct, Your Honor. It is structurally different.
We then take the position that the legislature now has broken it up into different sections, and that Gomez wouldn't apply to this case.
That's the government's position, Your
Honor.
Gomez
is the more recent case. The statute is more recent.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. I believe my time's expired. Thank you.
Ms. Silver?
Maybe you can talk about the differences between this statute and Gomez.
I don't believe there are any differences. There aren't. No.
No number.
It's exactly the same.
No subcommittee number.
No, there's no difference. There's no difference. It's now, it was 35C back then. Now it's 3602. They list the same. Gomez involved the same statute. And I do want to address the divisibility question.
The numbering,
and that's it. But the substantive difference is the same.
That's important. That's exactly what I
But it's not broken down into different sections, Your Honor. Gomez also involved a statute that defined physical abuse as an act, a malicious act or a course of cruel and unusual conduct, and it defined sexual abuse as
numbering. What's the numbering difference?
I don't know the exact numbers, but they're in their own sections in the same exact way that they are in their own sections here.
That may make a difference under the jurisprudence of Gomez.
It makes no difference, Your Honor. And this is why there really is no difference when you think about divisibility. Gomez recognized that even if you were to divide up the physical abuse subsection, in that case, into a malicious act versus a course of cruel and unusual conduct, it does not matter if neither of those sections meets all of the elements of the federal sentencing enhancement at issue. So in Gomez, the court said, fine, divide it up, but in neither of those divisions does it require a use of active physical force against someone else. So same thing here. If you would like to divide the sexual abuse section into exploitation versus molestation, which I would argue is contrary to what the Maryland courts do, You can divide it up, but you still can't find that either one of those meets all of the definitions of the federal sentencing enhancement, because neither exploitation nor molestation under Maryland law requires an intent to gratify. Well, let me give you an example of what the Maryland courts talk about molestation as being. If you look at the Tate case, in Tate, the defendant rubbed a girl's vagina, and the court held that it was not inconsistent for the jury to have held that there was no intent to gratify in that case. So rubbing a physical contact that to any lay person would be absolutely sexual.
Molestation?
There was no finding in that regard because there was no need to be. And Tate actually, it said, and this is the quote, all that is required for a touching to constitute sexual abuse is that it could be deemed to involve sexual molestation or exploitation of a minor in one breath.
Because that statement includes exploitation.
Yes.
Which I'm suggesting to you is if you break apart exploitation and molestation, that you can, the molestation part will satisfy the generic offense.
Well, what would you do with the DeGren case then, Your Honor? In DeGren, all the defendant did was, she didn't exploit her daughter, she didn't molest her daughter, she stood by and allowed someone else to do it. Because,
well, the
and this is
covers that too. The statute says you commit an abuse if you allow somebody else. In your
well, the statute
house.
Doesn't say that. And what DeGren quoted, and this is important, is the language. It quoted the specific text of the sexual abuse subdivision, which is that sexual abuse means any act that involves sexual molestation or exploitation. And it was that word involves that DeGren focused on. And it was the word involves that supported this notion that the Maryland courts recognize and that this court recognized in Gomez that this is a broad statute that punishes child abuse, that the gravamen of the offense is the abuse of the position of trust, not the actual act that was committed. And this addresses Your Honor's concern, Judge Niemeyer, that this Gomez made this court an outlier. And I would suggest it absolutely did not, because this is a child abuse statute. It's not a sexual abuse statute. And all of the other cases that have found sexual abuse statutes in other circuits.
See, child abuse, that argument doesn't get you anything except to deal with the sexual part. Child abuse can include physical harm and can include just tolerating inhumane conduct.
Absolutely.
So that's the problem. Now, the normal way to handle that is if it includes both and one of them satisfies the generic offense, then you look at the Shepherd documents to determine what was necessarily the conduct of conviction.
That's correct, and there
now,
is not...
The question is, Gomez now says that unless the statute really divides it up in such a manner that you can figure that out, you are not allowed to do that, even though the Court of Appeals has done that.
Well, Gomez... Well, actually, the Court of Appeals has not done that, Your Honor, and that's what's so important.
The Court of Appeals has done that. They have gone and described different situations where it's physical and where there's just toleration of sex.
But they haven't said that was molestation. Actually, in DeGren,
they haven't said one is molestation.
Exactly.
And one is
not at all. And more importantly,
molestation. I'm talking about generally on child abuse.
Well,
I
mean,
right.
So child abuse can include physical conduct. We don't need the sexual part. It seems to me child abuse, if it's a crime of violence, it's going to be an enhanced predicate offense.
Right, except in that case, if you want it to be a crime...
And we can determine it's a crime of violence, and I think most courts have indicated that a child of 11 years old can't consent and that it's a violent conduct to have sex with her. And why do we need the sex part? I mean, the point is Congress has said, if you are a defendant and are subject to a sentence and have a predicate offense, we want a stiffer sentence. And the Supreme Court has said, when you go to determine what Congress meant, you got to do it categorically. And if the state crime is broader but includes a generic crime, then you use a categorical approach. That's the point that Gomez addressed. Now, I know I was the dissenter on that. I recognize that. But that is the task at hand. And this idea saying sexual molestation or exploitation is the same word, it's just they just combine the two. Well, they combine the two, sure, but then you have to take them at their word. But it's in the disjunctive.
I understand that, Your Honor, but it's what the court needs to focus on, and I see that my time is up, is whether exploitation or molestation fit into the neat categories that the government wants them to in this case, which is that one requires an intent to gratify or a use of actual or constructive force, and one doesn't, and that simply is not the case here. They can both do either, and none of them require it. And despite how reprehensible anyone might think Mr. Cabrera's conduct is here, there's simply no division, neither of those divisions. We cannot place the conduct into either of those sections.
We know from reliable documents that he was necessarily convicted of a crime of violence. We know that Congress wants a crime of violence to be an enhancing factor. What we have done in Gomez is we have barred the ability to determine that by looking at the guilty plea and the indictment.
I respectfully disagree.
Of course
he was. Well, no, but this is the crucial point, and I think the Supreme Court will hopefully address this and make this even more clear in DeCamp.
Well,
he was not convicted of a crime of violence.
Join with the government and ask the Supreme Court to clear this up.
Well, the Supreme Court is
appeal.
Yeah, it's the government's burden to do that, but no, the Supreme Court is taking up a very related case in DeCamp, and hopefully will shed more light on this, but I think Gomez is dispositive. Thank you.
All right, we'll come down to Greek Council and go into the next case.